produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, Canadian Parliament cuts medical marijuana research funding. Federal funds previously earmarked to pay for clinical research on the therapeutic use of cannabis will no longer be available to investigators under budget cuts announced by Canadian government officials yesterday. The $4 million program was axed as part of a government proposal to eliminate $2 billion in federal programs. A separate Health Canada program that oversees the production and distribution of medical cannabis to federally authorized patients will remain in place despite the cuts. Fewer than 300 Canadian patients are estimated to use cannabis provided by Health Canada due to its reportedly poor quality. Despite earmarking funds for cannabis research, only one clinical trial investigating the therapeutic potential of cannabis is believed to have been approved by Canadian health regulators. That study, which seeks to assess the safety and efficacy of smoked cannabis in chronic pain patients, remains ongoing. Joining us today to discuss the news is Philippe Lucas, the director of the Victoria Island Compassion Society and one of the foremost authorities on medical marijuana in Canada. Philippe, welcome back to the Audio Stash.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Great to speak with you again today. First, tell us about this funding. How long has it been available and who has used it?
Well, it's been available since about 2000. It was originally a five-year, $7.5 million fund called the Medical Marijuana Research Program. And unfortunately, because they couldn't guarantee funding past 2005, the actual monies available ceased to be so in 2004. In fact, you couldn't even apply or submit an application for this funding past the spring of 2004. And so although this is a very disappointing announcement and certainly a potential sign up that the Conservative government's going to be approaching medical marijuana, on a very practical side, it'll make no difference to medical cannabis researchers since unfortunately there has been no federal money available for some time.
So by pulling this funding, they're not hindering or halting any ongoing research. Who did get what little of these funds were released?
Yeah, there was a researcher named Mark Ware out of McGill University's Pain Center has been doing a smoke cannabis and chronic pain double-blind clinical protocol since 2001, and he was the first recipient of that fund, and he's also been able to access some funding for an open-label safety initiative, and I'm not sure what the fate of that study is now that these funds are cut. The other recipient was an AIDS study that was approved in 2001, and Health Canada subsequently cut the funding to that program after $800,000 or so were spent. So out of that original $7.5 million, less than $2 million was distributed.
So, Philippe, what is the future of medical marijuana research in Canada? I know there's been a lot of outcry about the poor quality of medical marijuana that the government is supplying to patients as well.
Absolutely, and actually the fate of the production facility is still up in the air right now. Their contract was officially up at the end of 2005, and they're now on a six-month extension, which expires at the end of, this week, at the end of this month. And so the fate of the production facility is up in the air, but I'm happy to say that medical cannabis research is taking place here in Canada, but it's being put forward mostly by nonprofit medicinal cannabis dispensaries like the Vancouver Island Compassion Society and the British Columbia Compassion Club Society. In fact, Compassion Clubs right now are producing more medical marijuana research than any organization in Canada, and we're doing so at no cost to the Canadian taxpayer.
Philippe, thank you so much again for joining us here today on the Audio Stash.
Thank you. You guys have a great day.
Philippe Lucas is the director of the Victoria Island Compassion Society. We have links about today's news at normalaudiostash.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
755,000. That is a big number to be sure, but do you know what this number represents? It signifies the total number of citizens in America arrested on marijuana charges in 2004. That's right. 755,000 of your fellow citizens were arrested on marijuana charges. That's an arrest every 40 seconds, and 9 out of 10 of those arrested are for possession-only charges. Does continuing marijuana prohibition make sense to you? It certainly does not to the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws and its members. I'm Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and if you too think that it is high time to end marijuana prohibition and replace it with a tax and regulate policy, please join and support Normal's 36-year legislative efforts to reform our country's misguided marijuana laws. You can learn more about Normal or become an active supporter by calling toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L, or by visiting us on the web at normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit N-O-R-M-L.org. Tuesdays, we focus on medical and patient issues, and we continue our coverage of the new Normal Interactive Report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. The Normal Foundation is the only resource for such easy-to-use and comprehensive information. This report can be used by patients and medical marijuana advocates as a starting point for discussions with doctors and politicians. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Today here on the Audio Stash is Paul Armentano, Normal's Senior Policy Analyst, to discuss the new Normal report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. We have links to the report at normalaudiostash.com. Paul, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good to be here, Chris.
Thanks again for joining us today, Paul. All of this medical research and indeed the effect of cannabis on the body is happening through the cannabinoid receptors. First, what are cannabinoid receptors and where are they in the body?
Well, it's interesting. The first cannabinoid receptors were actually only discovered, early 1990s, I believe, so a little more than 10 years ago. And initially, they were discovered in the central nervous system. But as time has gone on, research has discovered that there's actually different types of cannabinoid receptors, and in fact that they are located throughout the body, not just in the central nervous system, but in fact they are finding cannabinoid receptors that are involved in the regulation of, say, the immune system, of the gastrointestinal system. They're involved in reproduction. So many of the primary functions of biology are actually influenced now by the cannabinoid receptors. So this is a much broader and significant receptor system than initially thought when the first cannabinoid receptors were discovered.
And Paul, these cannabinoid receptors exist in the body already to bind with endogenous cannabinoids, or cannabinoids produced naturally in the body.
Right. There are chemicals or molecules in the body known as endogenous cannabinoids that interact with these receptors, and as obviously most people listening know, exogenous cannabinoids such as THC, cannabidiol, and other cannabinoids found in marijuana also interact with these receptors and trigger a reaction.
So, Paul, do all cannabinoids bind with all cannabinoid receptors?
There certainly are, as I noted, different cannabinoid receptors, and they seem to have different functions. For instance, my understanding is that CB1 receptors, which are the receptors primarily found in the central nervous system, when cannabinoids act with those receptors, for instance, the euphoria that people are familiar with from THC is a result of the interaction with that specific receptor, whereas, for instance, CB2 receptors, when cannabinoids bind with those receptors, there are processes then involved in the regulation of the immune system, and there is not psychoactivity associated with the triggering of those receptors.
So all of the medical benefits proven to be associated with cannabis, increased appetite, dealing with incontinence, as well as relief to MS patients, all this comes from exogenous cannabinoids working with those cannabinoid receptors in the body.
Both exogenous and certainly endogenous cannabinoids. There are some experts who have looked at this issue and have theorized that, in fact, people suffering from certain diseases, such as certain gastrointestinal diseases or certain neurological diseases, they've speculated that one of the reasons people are suffering from them is because their internal cannabinoid system or their endogenous cannabinoid system is actually not functioning properly. And that is resulting in people being diagnosed or coming down with some of these diseases that we've discovered cannabinoids may help to moderate, such as fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, and many others.
Paul, we have long been familiar with the idea that a quote-unquote chemical imbalance in the brain would cause us to treat a person with serotonin or dopamine enhancing or depleting drugs. How does that brain chemical system compare with this cannabinoid receptor system?
Well, certainly when you look at the functions that the cannabinoid system seems to regulate, mood elevation, bone density, appetite, reproduction, motor coordination, this is clearly a vital system to human beings, and this system clearly needs to be functioning properly for the human body, likewise, to be functioning properly. One of the interesting things that have been noted most recently by researchers is when they have done animal testing on mice that are genetically bred to be lacking certain cannabinoid receptors. For instance, they breed certain mice to be lacking the CB1 receptor. What they discover is really rather startling and frightening. For instance, mice that are born without this receptor, generally, while at first when they're born they appear to be healthy and fertile, within weeks they begin demonstrating qualities like lack of motor coordination, they have a decreased sensitivity to pain, and they have decreased appetite, and most startlingly, they die sooner. So, you know, to sort of drive the point home, this is a system that really is involved in the most basic biological functions known to man.
Paul, this is fascinating. The cannabinoid receptor system seems to be so integral to our life. You know, why did it go undiscovered until just recently?
That's a great question, and I hope in the future you may have some guests that have a better understanding of this system and the research that went into discovering the system than me, because it is somewhat shocking to think that it was only 10, 15 years ago where scientists first began to even understand this process. And clearly this is a learning process that is going to take several decades before we have a very good grasp on it. But I do find it somewhat startling to think that until the early 1990s, we as a society really didn't even understand why someone felt quote-unquote high when they consumed marijuana.
Paul, some of the more recent research has to do with things that block these cannabinoid receptors, cannabinoid receptor antagonists, as they're called. With so little understanding of the comprehensive nature of this cannabinoid system, you know, how safe will this research be?
Well, clearly there have been clinical trials done on patients who have used some of these blocking agents, and they have noted, the researchers involved in the studies have noted some potential adverse side effects, or I should say reported adverse side effects, mood disorders, depression, some other issues. But questions regarding the potential long-term effects to health of short-circuiting this system, I don't believe we are aware of, and I think certainly we can speculate that long-term, you know, blocking this system or interrupting this system from engaging in the functions that it's meant to engage in, I think several of us, it would be safe to say that many of us who study this issue are concerned that there could be potential negative adverse consequences of targeting and short-circuiting the system.
And in just the last 15 years, the entire time we've known about the cannabinoid receptor system, we've seen the dosage levels of drugs we thought we knew a lot about drop dramatically, especially in the case of antidepressants. So, Paul, you know, how much confidence do you have in the current FDA research and academic communities in place? How much confidence do you have in them dealing with such monumental news, such a monumental biological issue in the human body in a good way?
Unfortunately, due to the sort of inherent bias that there has been within, in many cases, the scientific and medical community, certainly within the regulatory and political communities, regarding anything having to do with cannabis, and unfortunately the endocannabinoid receptor system would fall into that category, I am not convinced that the individuals who will at some point be making decisions regarding whether to approve or disapprove these sort of drugs and these sort of drug agents will have the proper understanding of the system to make sound judgments, nor do I think they will be particularly objective, because if history is any lesson, they certainly have not been objective in the past when it has come to decisions regarding the safety and efficacy of the therapeutic use of cannabinoids.
Paul Armentano is Normal's senior policy analyst and author of the new Normal report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. It's available on Normal's website, and we have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Paul will join us next week on the Audio Stash to discuss cannabinoid receptor antagonists in more detail. Let's round out our show today with some PodSafe music found up at podshow.com. Thanks, everyone, for listening here today to the Audio Stash. Don't forget to cast your vote up at podcastalley.com. We'll start off this set with some J-Nox, then it's Bradley, and then Casey Desmond.
I'm not Tupac, and I'm not Biggie, not Slim Shady, and no, not Fitty, not Rakim, Nas, Jay-Z, Busta, or a new Jack Hustler, but I still dust ya. I'm not Tupac, and I'm not Biggie. Not Rakim, Nas, Jay-Z, Busta, or a new Jack Hustler, but I still dust ya.
J-Dox, 5'9¾". A beanie sport, a true underground beat supporter. Keeping sorta, a low profile shorter. A street reporter, keeping all of my speeches in order. Breaching the dysfunctional border, I enter. Building with cats from L.A. to Loma Linda. Founding member of the board of directors. Plus I got connections from Cali to Texas. You know I strive for perfection like my EP, CD, EZ, distributed freely. At least for the most part. All of my big girls, they wanna know when the show starts. But see, where I come from, life is one big low-income conundrum. On a constant paper chase. Well, for that, and abstract tracks with the fat bass. Now lyric goes to waste when I'm in the place, in your face, when you hear my words interlaced with the beat. Never incomplete when I'm on the street. Only time I halt and screech is if my cell is beep. It could be mitrous or release. That's wifey and seed. An emergency with them, well then I leave. If not, then with my rhyming I proceed. Breathing in the secondhand smoke from y'all's weed.
I'm not Tupac and I'm not Biggie. Not Slim Shady and no, not Fitty. Not Rakim, Nas, Jay-Z, Busta, or a new Jack Hustler, but I still dust ya. I'm not Tupac and I'm not Biggie. Not Slim Shady and no, not Fitty. Not Rakim, Nas, Jay-Z, Busta, or a new Jack Hustler, but I still dust ya.
Comes free if you'll be with me. out feeling the same as you do. Tell me the best is on its way to you, girl. How do I keep it all a secret? I can't tell no one. No longer best is in you, you, you. You make me love you, and I can't believe I'm falling for it. I can't tell you no. How the hell do I tell you no? How do I go about feeling the same as you do? I can't tell you no. Hear me now, just let me know. Taste it. Tell me when to place it on you. Taste it. Oh, don't tell me just to waste it on you. On you. How do I stick around or enough to hear me? Tell me it all can be left unsaid. Yeah, yeah. How do I keep an eye open to watch you?
Just heard J-Dox, Bradley, and Casey Desmond, all with tracks found up at podshow.com. We have links to all the artists at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Sure, you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.